As much of the country grapples with problems resulting from opioid addiction, some Massachusetts scientists say they're getting a better understanding of the profound role the brain plays in addiction. Their studies suggest that any treatment is going to have to take that into account. In the latest in our series, Brain Matters, reporting from the front lines of neuroscience, we visit the University of Massachusetts Medical School, which has a center devoted to studying the neuroscience behind addiction.
You know, I was having some issues with my relationship at the time.
It took 38-year-old Mary Kate Farley Domino a long time to admit that she's an alcoholic. It first came up when she was talking about her relationship issues with a therapist.
And then, you know, then she said, maybe look at your drinking. And that was like, why? It's not my drinking, it's his drinking. That's the problem.
Farley Domino told herself that she had a steady job, she wasn't in any trouble, and she started doing what she calls experiments in controlled drinking, putting limits on her alcohol.
I had little deals in my head where I would say, I'm only going to drink enough to feel a buzz, but not enough to get hungover. And what I found out after all these experiments was that I couldn't stop once I started.
That was 7 years ago. She's been sober ever since. She credits her success largely to the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, but also to her work on meditation and mindfulness. Farley Domino attends meditation classes at the University of Massachusetts Medical School's Center for Mindfulness. She hopes that this will not just help her, but also inform her work as a peer counselor at the Recover Project in Greenfield. It's an organization for people struggling with addiction.
For me, mindfulness fits into the practice of living an authentic life.
She says being mindful or present in her everyday life goes along with the principles of the 12 steps.
When I take the time to be mindful, I am improving my conscious contact with something bigger than myself. And I'm also able to really see why I'm here. You know, I've connected to a purpose. For me, that's recovery.
When she is not being mindful, Farley Domino says those relationship problems and general malaise start to surface again. Researchers at the Mindfulness Center know that Farley Domino is onto something. They're experimenting with mindfulness as a way to help people stop using one of the most common and most addictive substances.
Welcome to Craving to Quit, a 3-week program that will help you quit smoking.
This cell phone app is now in clinical trials. It talks people through daily exercises to ride out their cravings for cigarettes.
First, recognize that the wanting or craving is coming on and relax into it.
We can give them the tools that they need to learn at their fingertips so they don't have to remember them right away. You don't have to forget it anymore because it's right on your phone.
Dr. Judson Brewer is director of the Mindfulness Center.
We found that mindfulness was actually twice as good as the American Lung Association's Freedom from Smoking Group, which is one of the gold standard treatments. So we're seeing a really clear clinical signal here. It's helping people with addictions.
Dr. Brewer says physicians have long heard from their patients about the benefits of mindfulness, but they didn't understand the science involved. That's where his research comes in. It centers on the part of the brain that he calls the default mode network. This is actually several regions of the brain that we essentially default to when we're multitasking or thinking about things other than what we're doing.
We think about what we're going to make for dinner. We wonder if we're going to make the next meeting. That's our default mode. That's what we do. There's a study at Harvard showing that, in fact, we default to this about 50% of waking life. 50% of the time, we're not paying attention.
This default network also becomes active when someone is anxious and when someone is craving nicotine. Dr. Brewer uses neurofeedback to measure what's going on in that part of the brain during meditation.
What we found was something that was really interesting and a complete surprise to us because it was different than what a lot of other meditation reports had shown before. We found that the default mode network got really quiet in experienced meditators.
Meditation is just one focus of research taking place at the medical school's Brudnick Neuropsychiatric Research Institute. In a soon-to-be-published study led by Andrew Tapper, interim director of the Institute, scientists identified the area of the brain responsible for withdrawal.
We were able to cause nicotine withdrawal symptoms even in an animal that had never seen nicotine before, and that was sort of the aha moment that linked that particular brain region and a certain group of neurons within the brain region to nicotine withdrawal symptoms directly.
Tapper hopes his research helps scientists figure out how to reduce activity in that part of the brain, alleviating withdrawal symptoms. The overall theme of most of these studies is that the brain plays a huge role in addiction. Another study shows that the brain actually rewires itself and becomes active when craving nicotine.
This is the first evidence that the brain actually self-activates. It just activates spontaneously when the nicotine isn't there.
Dr. Joseph DeFranza used MRIs, magnetic resonance imaging, and believes he found the area of the brain responsible for craving.
So we put people in the magnet who haven't smoked overnight, and these specific areas of the brain become activated. The more the person reports that they're craving a cigarette, the more activation in these specific regions of the brain. And this is not something that we understood even a year ago. We thought that craving was caused by being exposed to situations that remind you of smoking or cues.
DeFranza found something else surprising, that addiction affects the connections in the brain, sometimes permanently. So in some cases, he says, the brain is supporting the addiction. His work found that as cravings increase, there's a weakening in the connections to the part of the brain responsible for self-control.
And they've lost about two-thirds of the nerve fibers that are connecting the part of their brain that is responsible for the self-control to the part where the craving is generated. So people are facing some major obstacles when they try to quit because their brain is wired. It's actually hardwired now to support that addiction.
What this means, the scientists say, is that any addiction treatment will have to be individualized and take into account that addiction changes the brain. Psychiatry professor Dr. Gene King says with addiction, it's not likely there will ever be one cure.
Well, you can't go in like certain diseases and you fix it. This is a disease that you could fix it now and 10 years later somebody could go back to drugs. The insidious thing about addiction is it is this disease that never really quits.
And for many of those struggling, like Mary-Kate Farley-Domino, any treatment will have to address the root of addiction.
Substance abuse, I think, is it's a symptom and it's a solution for a larger problem, which is this discomfort, you know? People use substances and use behaviors to get out of that discomfort. And it might just be the human condition.
Maybe neuroscience will tackle that someday as well. Next week in our series Brain Matters, WBUR's George Hicks reports on the burgeoning field of music neuroscience and the benefits to the brain of making music.
Music is not an island in the brain cut off from other things. There's overlap between the networks that process music and the networks that are involved in other day-to-day functions such as language, memory, attention, and so forth.
On our website, you'll find detailed new images of the human brain, as well as video profiles of 11 young Boston area scientists on the cutting edge of brain research. That's all at WBUR.org.